everyone. Welcome to the latest episode of the Arkansas Shrimp Tank. I'm your host, Rich Jensen, along with my co-host, David Sims, and we're coming to you from the BRS Consulting Studio here in Little Rock. Each week on the podcast, we try and bring you some real tidbits of some of the brightest and best CEOs, business owners, and lately a lot of startup capital funding ideas that just happen to be available to us in Arkansas, and that's who we have today. But before we get into that, David, how was your week last week?
I was
cruising the Caribbean, so I don't know what
you're
up
to. Yeah, it was good. Y'all have a good time?
Yeah, we had a great time. Lousy weather. Well, not lousy. I would say moderate weather. Only one real sunny day. But hey, you're not working, and you're being fed like crazy.
You know, I kept everybody in line here, man. Everything's good. Business rolled on. You know, you see, it can work without you. We're fine. We had a great time. Put a lot of basketball while you were gone with my son coaching his team, and but doing really, really well. Looking forward to the Christmas break here, man.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Hey, we have a very special guest on the podcast today, Jeff Standridge, who is very accomplished in all sorts of areas. So I'm going to let David kind of read his bio.
Yeah, I've got a bio. It's going to take up probably about 30 minutes, but I'm gonna cherry pick here. All right, Jeff.
Yeah, please.
It's great to have you on the show. Like, you know, we talked a couple weeks ago, and like I said, I've been meaning to reach out to you. We got so many connections, heard so many great things about you. So we're really excited about getting to know you. Really excited about your commitment to come on the show regularly. You know, every other week. And contribute to this.
You bring lunch. I'm here, man.
That's right. We got lunch.
You're replacing us as hosts when we go on vacation.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly.
Yeah, where are these guys?
So let me cherry pick here from this bio. And for our listeners, if you want to get it, you can get it at Jeff Standridge Innovation Partners. Just Google that and you'll be able to find it and get to know Jeff. You really should get to know him. But he is involved directly in the creation of a sustainable venture ecosystem across the state of Arkansas and beyond. What's interesting about Jeff is, in reading the bio, he's got two retirements in there already, and he's only 30, right? I mean, you're only 30, and you're married
30.
And have two
only
kids.
30.
Only 30.
Only 30, but he has a 26-year-old daughter.
26-year-old daughter, that's right. This dude is amazing, folks.
I tell someone that I celebrated the, what did I call it, the 31st anniversary of my 21st birthday.
I gotcha. Right. But he recently retired from Axion Corporation. There's a whole bunch in there. One of the things that's very interesting, and I hope to pick up a little bit in the questions, is being involved in over two dozen M&A transactions and startup companies in Poland and China. So he's got all kind of experience here. He also retired from the U.S. Army, Arkansas Army National Guard, with a lot of decorations, it looks like, and a lot of accolades. So he's got two retirements, and now he is, if I figure it out correctly, he's got four things he's involved in. It's Chief Catalyst with the Conductor, which we're going to focus on this podcast, and then our next one will be focusing on your work with Cadron Capital and your teaching at University of Central Arkansas as an adjunct professor in their entrepreneurial finance program. It's actually there more of a technical to them. We'll get into that more on the second podcast too. So we got a lot to cover here. And Jeff is married to Lori, has two daughters, Katie and Anna, who are 26, 24, and one of them's getting married soon, which is exciting.
Very soon, about 4 weeks from tomorrow.
I've got four daughters and none of them are married yet. And I think it's just because, I know, I just, Lord knows I can't afford it.
Exactly. Tell me about that.
Well, I got two books here in front of it. Jeff's the best-selling author of The Innovator's Field Guide, Accelerators for Entrepreneurs, Innovators, and Change Agents, published in 2017. And The Top Performer's Field Guide, Catalysts for Leaders, Superstars, and All Who Aspire to Be. And I'm looking for the publication date
18,
on that one.
May of 18.
2018 just came out. He's also the author of The Abundance Principle, Five Keys to Extraordinary Living. Published in numerous articles, been quoted in all over the place, Wall Street Journal, you name it. He's got Watt workshops. I could go on and on and on. Looking forward to being able to unpack this more in the show, Jeff. Thanks for coming on. Welcome to your inaugural swim in the Arkansas Shrimp Tank.
Listen, I'm excited and honored to be here, and I'm looking forward to having fun with you guys.
It's great to have you. Thank you so
much. We've already been having fun before in the green room, which doesn't exist. We're in our one-shop studio. Hey, but thanks again, Jeff, for coming on the show. There's a lot we want to cover with you, and I know there's no way we're going to get through it all. So like David said, we're looking forward to having you back on and actually becoming a regular guest for us. So let's start with a little bit of background as opposed to bio kind of thing as far as resume. But tell us a little bit about you, where you grew up, your family education, and the early work experience that maybe landed you to where you are now.
Sure. I grew up in a small town called Glenwood, Arkansas, about an hour and a half south of here, just outside of Hot Springs on Highway 70. Graduated high school with 28 people.
Wow.
And, you know, you go to a small school like that, you play football, basketball, baseball, you run track, you play in the band, you're in the Future Farmers of America.
And you're the star.
Yeah, and the Future Homemakers of America. That's where I learned to make apron strings and biscuits. You know, I've worked ever since I was in about the third grade. Started out mowing yards and shining shoes to working in a gas station by the time I was in the sixth and seventh grades. And, you know, by the time I was in the ninth grade, I was cutting exhaust systems off of automobiles and bending the pipe and rewelding them back on. So I, you know, grew up in a family where my dad worked for the predecessor of Entergy, Arkansas Power and Light. He was a lineman. My mom worked for Arkla Gas and in banks and a number of other jobs like that. So, you know, blue-collar family, and I tell people that I ended up going to the University of Central Arkansas on a music scholarship. That was before I found out that I played music just because I worked hard and I wasn't innately talented, and you become a music major, they separate the
weak. But you didn't know that since there were only 28 people in your class.
That's exactly right. And so, yeah, nobody told me I couldn't play until I got to college. And I tell people that the University of Central Arkansas really changed my financial but it changed my family tree. It altered my family tree, transformed that tree. And you know, there was no question that my kids were going to go to college when they graduated high school. So went to UCA, worked my way through college there as an EMT at Conway Regional Hospital, and went on to get a degree in respiratory therapy because I wanted to fly on the helicopter team at Arkansas Children's Hospital. And I did that and did it for about 9 years, both full and part-time, about 3 or 4 years full-time. And that's where I met my wife. She was a flight nurse. And she kept begging me to ask her out. And I kept saying, no, it wouldn't be appropriate. And finally, she don't tell her that story because she remembers it a little differently than that.
Yeah, like we believe you.
Yeah, no, you've only been around me a little bit. You already know that that's probably not the truth. But we've been married almost 28 years and have a great life together and have been very fortunate to be involved in a number of things.
Yes, that's so exciting. So share with our listeners how you got onto the path of serial entrepreneurship and teaching about innovative entrepreneurial finance and leadership at the University of Central Arkansas.
So I began my entrepreneurial career as an intrapreneur. So someone who was doing very entrepreneurial things, but within the safety net of an established company and a corporate salary. 2003, Axiom acquired 21 companies in 7 countries in Europe, headquartered in the UK, both companies headquartered in the UK. And we didn't really have an acquisition integration function. How do you take all those companies and how do you mash them together and make them? And oh, by the way, these two companies were fierce competitors. In fact, employees had moved from one to the other, say in the UK, where they were literally two towns apart. Companies that were in, employees that were in Company B had left Company A, and so they all got up every day and went to work and thought about how to whip each other in the marketplace. And so now they're back on the same team. And so I went over there to do the acquisition integration and to create an integration function, quite frankly. And that's how I got involved in all of Axiom's future transactions. How I got into the and so that was more entrepreneurial, more innovation, I guess, than entrepreneurship. But then I had some problems retaining talent in our UK office, particularly technical talent, because they would be snatched up by the financial institutions. And I found out that in our Warsaw office, we had very strong English-speaking employees who loved Axiom, who were very technically talented. And so I put them in that office to support our operation in the UK. And so it was kind of how would I describe it? An insourced onshore or nearshore kind of strategy.
Right.
And so I, when I came back to the U.S. and in 2004, 2005, I was experiencing some same challenges, or some of the executives in Arkansas were experiencing some of the same challenges trying to outsource to India. And with the data that we had, it was a lot of security requirements. And I just said, why don't we put them under an Axiom logo in an Axiom facility with Axiom firewalls and Axiom employees? And so by the time it was really found out about, we had about 20 people in a 35-person office supporting operations in other countries. And so if you'll remember, back in about 2007, Axiom was getting ready to go through private equity deal that ended up failing and not occurring. But I was asked to create a global workforce strategy where we would optimize the location of employees across our 4 or 5 U.S. locations, moving them from high-cost geographies to low-cost geographies, i.e. California, New York, Illinois to Arkansas, and then perhaps from some of those locations, including London and downtown Paris and what have you, to Warsaw.
Interesting.
And did that, created a center in Gdańsk and in Warsaw, Poland. And then a new CEO came on board a couple of years later, and I did the same thing in China. And then an acquisition in the Middle East and an acquisition in Brazil. And that's how I kind of got into the entrepreneurship
world. Gotcha. Yeah. And gave you such, I mean, if you're right in the middle of an M&A space, doing that, I mean, that gave you some incredible experience for now doing what you're doing with the conductor and Cadran and elsewhere.
Absolutely. I owe Axiom and the leaders there who gave me opportunities to do things that I had never done or that perhaps had never been done there. I owe them so much today because of the experience that I received.
Yeah, because you can definitely translate those experiences, those principles and everything else right over into
Whether it's leadership or it's just the acquisition terminology and the things that you have to do to acquire and to integrate, or a lot of the things you have to do to just make an initial investment.
Translate it over into the small and medium business entities that you teach on at the and then you obviously work with.
Yeah, and so I started when that private equity deal cratered in 2007, you know, I watched my, as a 41-year-old or so, I watched all of my personal market-based holdings, many of which were in Axiom, you know, basically go down to 4 figures.
Right, right.
And it was like, okay, as the stock returns over the years, I'm going to need to diversify.
Right.
So I started looking around for some local businesses that might need some investment and might need, you know, some expertise, and ended up acquiring an insurance agency with some partners, and we've had that now for about 8 years. Acquired with my nephew and his wife a large automotive service center, which they now own outright. And so I've invested in a number of small businesses that way. And then in 2013, decided to start Cadran Creek Capital, which was an investment fund, an angel fund focused on investing primarily in Arkansas-based startups, tech or tech-enabled startups, but also looking to invest in some other companies that might be right outside the state who had already received investment from Arkansas funds. And so that's how I also got into more of the what I would call the formal investment game was through Cadran Creek Capital.
Gotcha. Good. Well, we're going to go jump into Cadran next podcast. But let's, Rich has got is teed up for the next question.
Yeah, David talked about earlier the conductor.
Yeah.
And so let's spend a little bit of time talking about that. What is it? And maybe we can do a little business critical thinking on a case study on
sure,
that.
Sure, sure. So the conductor is a public-private partnership with the University of Central Arkansas and Startup Junkie Consulting out of Northwest Arkansas. At the same time that I was chair of the chamber and we put a committee together to explore what do we need to do to build an entrepreneurial ecosystem in Conway, particularly focused on Central Arkansas, but anchored in Conway because of the 3 institutions of higher ed, now the 4th with OBU at NLC, but with 2 large technology-based employers and a very educated workforce, we found that entrepreneurs needed access to guidance, expertise, mentors, and consultants. So guidance, access to experts. They needed an ecosystem where they could come together socially, but also have a culture of idea sharing and resource sharing and what have you. And third, they needed access to talent and capital. And so that's where Cadran was started. But we also brokered a conversation, if you will, between the then president of UCA, Tom Courtway, and Jeff Amerine, the founding principal of Startup Junkie, to examine all of those assets that we had and to ask the question, how might we deploy those assets toward the building of an entrepreneurial ecosystem anchored here? And when Board of Trustees approved that in August of 16, we launched in November of 16, and then President Houston Davis, the now president of UCA, came on board in January of 17 and immediately not only bought into the vision, but helped expand the vision as well.
Yeah.
We've added a makerspace, and so we're focused on doing just that, innovation, entrepreneurship, talent development and economic empowerment in Central Arkansas and beyond.
Yeah, I spent a lot of time on the website reading about all that. It's fascinating, the makerspace and everything else. But let's drill down a little bit on a specific hypothetical fact pattern to see if the conductor can help or could work.
Okay.
So a healthcare startup company administering a new infusion therapy to patients suffering from chronic pain and chronic mood disorders, such as treatment-resistant or refractory depression, is finishing up its first year of operations with the CEO aggressively launching into selling franchises across the country for the particular model of infusion therapy and care developed. Can the conductor help?
Absolutely. So that generally what would happen there is they would come to us and schedule a meeting, and it's happens directly on our website, go straight to our calendars.
Mm-hmm.
There's a few little questions there that they ask, and they literally can schedule that meeting by the time they get off of our website.
Wow.
And then they come in and sit down, usually with me. They may sit down with Kim Lane, who's the CEO of the conductor, a fascinating leader within the conductor and the entrepreneurial ecosystem. But they might come and sit down with me, and we would start by talking about what are they trying to achieve, where are they trying to go, what obstacles or challenges have they found, and how can we help them move down the path? Generally, what we would do in a more established company like that is identify the biggest challenges and where we can connect them with resources.
Right.
Sometimes it's about asking them questions that they hadn't thought to ask.
Right.
And helping them crystallize the answers.
Yeah. Much. Yeah. Fascinating.
I would consider that a more established example.
Mm-hmm. Does the conductor work mostly with pre-stage startup, conceptual stuff, or is it pretty much the whole spectrum?
It's the gamut. The gamut. I have worked with solopreneurs. Mm-hmm. So quick anecdote there. A lady came to me, said that she had four kids. She needed to make a living. She was a single mother. She wanted to start a cleaning business. She needed to know how to actually market her business and create connections. And we gave her some guidance and advice. And 2 years forward, she was the Minority Business Person of the Year.
Wow.
And so that was a solopreneur example.
Right.
Ultimately, what we want to do is we want to create more scalable companies that generate high-wage employees,
right?
And jobs for high-wage employees.
Right.
But the way you do that is you fill the top of the funnel with anyone who has an entrepreneurial idea. So I meet with entrepreneurs, aspiring entrepreneurs, people with just an idea that they think could be a product or a service, established business owners, and startup founders who are looking for capital or want to look for capital.
Gotcha. That's good.
I'm just taking all sorts of notes here. So.
Yeah, that's right. A little bit of silence there.
Exactly.
Rich has got the next question.
Yeah. I think it's the website, talked about innovation partners.
Mm-hmm.
So how might innovation partners be able to help this kind of a startup that David mentioned?
So I talked about the main components of a vibrant entrepreneurial ecosystem would be, access to capital, talent, entrepreneurial culture, but also engagement of the community and certainly within that community, flagship institutions.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing that I've kind of been on a little bit of a bandwagon about is that for Arkansas's entrepreneurial ecosystem to flourish, we really need the engagement of established employers. And there are two benefits directly back to them. One is it intensifies the talent pool for those companies to recruit and select talent because the skills and disciplines of innovation and entrepreneurship are transferable.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have to be done in an entrepreneurial startup company.
Mm-hmm.
I was demonstrating and leveraging innovation entrepreneurship in an established 6,000 employee company. That's the first one. The second thing is a lot of these companies don't have the money to have robust R&D programs. And so by investing in the entrepreneurial ecosystem, they can mine that ecosystem for potential R&D opportunities within their company. If you take a look at FIS and the Venture Center, they're a prime example of that today with their FinTech Accelerator. They are investing in the Venture Center's FinTech Accelerator, and they're looking at the companies that come through that as potential partners of theirs going forward.
Yeah, got it. That's great. I think you've already answered my next question, so I think we're going to move into our because I was going to basically, with this hypothetical company, how might you engage them on those things? And it just really depends. Let's have the first meeting.
That's right.
And gather the facts. Basically.
That's right. In a discovery meeting with them, we figure out what they need. And I'll tell you, sometimes it's a one and done. Someone comes in, they meet with me. I might give them some homework, particularly for the early stage companies. I might give them specific homework, and I might not hear from them again.
Right, right.
Many times they'll come back for more, and we'll set up a regular progress plan. And you know, I've got one established company that has 600 employees that I've worked with them through some just organizational structure and leadership issues. Mm. And I tell them as they leave, look, when you need to meet, you just schedule the time and let's sit down.
Yeah, yeah.
And great. And they do that. And I've probably met with them on over a half a dozen, 10 times. Maybe.
And at what point do they, or do they never have to actually pay for all this free advice?
For what we do, they never have to pay.
Wow.
Wow.
Our model.
Y'all hear that on the show?
That's music to an entrepreneur's ear.
Well, yeah. If you think about it, you know, the vast majority of startup companies and small businesses ultimately fail over a five-year horizon. Mm-hmm. And so, and they fail for very preventable reasons. But they don't have the expertise or access to the expertise to understand what those preventable potential hurdles are. And they can't pay for it. They don't have the money to pay for it. So we provide that to them, mm-hmm. and we provide them a fairly disciplined process to de-risk their business model, so to speak, in order to increase the chances of success. And our intention is that they would never pay. So we go and get outside sources of funding. Part of our funding comes from large organizational NGOs and grants and foundations and corporate partners. We do some for-profit consulting in the larger established companies,
And
the proceeds of which go to support the entrepreneurship initiative as well. And then occasionally we'll sign on some corporate partners who will choose to provide some sponsorship funding to us as well.
Right. Fantastic. Yeah.
Hey, Jeff, I'm going to actually turn it over to our producer, Gordon, to ask the next question, because you've given us so much good info that I think we've got some of the...
You want me to jump into the shrimp cocktails?
We're giving him the shrimp cocktail. First question in the shrimp cocktail section where we're seeking more wisdom. You know, and I'm hoping his question is going to be a jumbo shrimp question. Give us a jumbo shrimp.
So much weight on
Hit
my
shoulders. Hit me with it.
Jeff, right. I think, right between the eyes, I think we're going to talk a little more about this on the next show, but as UCA is my alma mater, and unfortunately, yes, sir, we didn't cross paths while I was there. But could you share a little bit with our listeners about what you teach and maybe what you're imparting to the MBA students on that kind of level of classwork and whatnot?
Sure. I teach two classes. In the fall, I teach entrepreneurial and small business finance, which is a 4,000, 5,000 level course. So I have senior finance, accounting and entrepreneurship students, and then MBA students. Mm-hmm. And it's usually about a third MBA students, two-thirds undergrads. And then I teach a course in the spring called Innovation Leadership, which is all graduates, and it's split between MBAs and PhD students usually.
Okay.
But I am a pragmatist. I'm about the real world. Spirit of full disclosure, I don't have a business degree. I don't have, well... I don't know if I ought to
you've
say
got this. A, you've do got a, you do have a business degree.
Well, I don't have an academic degree.
Right. Yeah.
In fact,
Axiom's like about as good a degree as you can get, that experience
right.
there, man.
The School of Hard Knocks, right?
Golly.
And I'm reluctant to say this, but I've told my students, so it's no real secret. The only business course that I ever took as an undergraduate was my very first semester in college, and it was an economics course, and I made a D in that course. The only D I've ever made in my life. And so while there is a specific body of knowledge that someone needs to walk out of an entrepreneurial finance class having learned, I feel that my job, and I tell my students, half my job is to teach you that body of knowledge. The second half of my job is to teach you how to be a top performer and how to be a top performer in the real world. And so I pattern all of my classroom management techniques, if you will, around how to create that real world work environment. So, for example, all of my students have my mobile phone, and I don't care that they have to miss a class occasionally. We're all big boys and girls. Occasionally things come up. We have to miss work. But we would never, ever just not show up to work without calling in.
Right.
So if those students call me or text me before 8 a.m. on a Tuesday or Thursday morning before class, it's immediately excused. I don't care what. They don't even have to tell me the excuse.
Right.
Because I want them to understand it's like a workplace.
Yeah, yeah. It's good. I'm just pulling up the syllabus to that class. And
well, you were really holding me accountable.
It's really good. Well,
I didn't know that was
there. I train my kids. I said, listen, man, first thing you do is you get that syllabus and you plan out your semester and you figure out what that professor's expectations are. But I love this seventh one, and we'll talk more about it in the next podcast. But course objectives, students will experience the expectation of responsibility and accountability in the classroom in a manner consistent with what they should expect when they're in the workforce, including but not limited to the expectation, and it's as italicized and bolded, excellence in all things, such as quality of work, adherence to deadlines, taking initiative, personal 100% responsibility, et cetera, which is fantastic. I mean, it's just it has to be a great experience for the students.
Well, I, the feedback I'm getting, I'll tell you, the first day of class, it kind of freaks them out.
Yeah.
I mean, and I watch them literally freak out in the classroom. I try to send them an email ahead of the start of class to give them an example or give them an idea. But even when I go through it in class, it's almost like it's a surreal experience for
right.
them. And, you know, and the example is, look, if you contract with me for the grade of A, and I have initiated the draft contract, but I tell them, you need to get $3,000 to $5,000 of value out of this class over the next 3 to 5 years, because theoretically they've invested $1,000 in the course. And so 3 to 5 times in 3 to 5 years.
Right.
And so I tell them to take home, mark up the contract, bring it back to me, and most of them will contract for an A, a few will contract for a B, maybe 1 out of 40 would contract for a C.
Hmm.
And I tell them, look, if you don't meet the terms of the contract for the grade that you've contracted, you don't get the next lower grade. You just fail.
Wow.
So it's an A or an F. It's a B or an F. And if you see that you're not meeting the expectations, or you are at risk of not meeting the expectations of the contract for which you contracted, or the grade for which you
renegotiation.
Contracted. Renegotiation. Then you need to renegotiate.
And
it's your responsibility to come back and say,
hey.
And I tell them, look, we all have to triage things in our lives. That's the real world. Now, most of them start triaging about the second, the last three quarters of the semester, right?
Right.
But here's the deal. I tell them, look, if you walk out of here and you've negotiated down for a B or a C and you've learned the fundamentals and you've learned how to manage and remanage and reset expectations in the real world, then I'm good with that.
I always picture that scene between Keanu Reeves and Al Pacino up there on the top of Pacino's, you know, New York City law office, and he goes, "We negotiating."
Yeah, exactly.
You ever had one of your students come and say, "Professor, can we negotiate?"
It's interesting. I can always tell. Many of them, I will tell them just to, you know, we can negotiate by email or what have you. But I'll have a few students who will schedule time and they will come to my office because they want to do it face to face. And that's kind of a really cool thing.
That's a jumbo shrimp right there.
That's a jumbo shrimp.
Okay, we're running low on time here, but I do want to get into our Plead the Fifth segment because that's where we try and put you on the hot seat here.
We have some fun with this.
Y'all didn't tell me about that segment.
That's right. Yeah. Well, you didn't listen to any of the podcasts, did you?
Well, we let David do all the Plead the Fifths.
That's right.
He got brutal because he's tired of losing. We keep losing to everybody.
Yeah, it's all in fun, though. You know, you have Plead the Fifth. You have the right to remain silent. Anything you say or use can and will be used against you. So, you know.
Okay. So
can we do it before the question's asked?
First question is, will you or will you not agree under oath and penalties of perjury to return to the Shrimp Tank for more shows and be a regular guest?
Man, I would absolutely do that.
All right. Good.
Right?
That's great.
Because that's the only way you're going to get a point.
Okay.
Yeah. And people who know me personally know that I have a radio face anyway.
So, So what's the hottest investment opportunity you're working on in Conway that you're willing to share with us, even though you're under an NDA with regard to it?
Plead the Fifth.
All right. If you had $1 million free capital to risk, what Central Arkansas venture would you invest in right now, being specific with the names and details?
Of IP.
Plead the Fifth. Now, I'll tell you, there is a really cool company here in Central Arkansas right now called Aptegy, APPTEGY.
Oh, yeah.
Great CEO by the name of Justin George. And I will tell you, I am an investor. There's another one up in Northwest Arkansas, quite frankly, by the name of Joe Earhart, who's got a company called 3E Software. And both very good, solid entrepreneurs. No, not good. Excellent entrepreneurs who care about their people, who are building world-class companies. And they are right here in Arkansas.
That's fantastic. All right, what are the names of the company and its founding entrepreneur who have made the worst startup mistakes you've ever witnessed?
No.
So we're tied right now, so maybe you'll answer this one. What were the mistakes?
What were the mistakes of the companies?
Yeah.
You know, the single greatest mistake I'll give you a stat. 36% of all startup companies fail because they create a product or service that no one wants.
Wow.
And what I mean by that is they fall in love with their idea. They don't fall in love with the problem they're trying to solve or the opportunity they're trying to seize.
Wow.
And so we teach our entrepreneurs, look, get pedantic about describing the problem that you're trying to solve, and then go talk to people whom you believe are key experiencers of that problem. And don't bias the audience. Don't lead the witness. We help them craft a kind of an interview protocol around how to validate that in fact is a problem that people would be willing to pay to have solved.
I liked how you put it, Jeff, on a company you and I are advising on. Mm-hmm. You said, is it really a problem or just a nuisance? Mm-hmm. People will just whine and complain about a nuisance, right, but they'll spend money to solve a problem.
That's right.
That's a great way of looking at it.
And most entrepreneurs try to build companies around either just great ideas or just nuisances that aren't sustainable from a business model perspective.
Well, my count, you answered 3 out of 5, so you win, man. That's right.
There you have it.
Lunch is on us.
Okay, perfect.
So, Jeff, you obviously fared pretty well considering David had some real loaded questions in there. But, David, just real briefly, because we are out of time, touch on rehirement, because Jeff's already done 2.
Yeah. You know, our sponsor of the show is BRS Consulting, and they refer to themselves as advisors who talk about rehirement, not retirement. Mm-hmm. And so the concept is, you know, retirement is really when you die. You know, that's when it's done.
That's right.
But you finish, you know, one phase and you get to where you can go on to the next phase and you have enough to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. So talk about that with your two retirements, which actually there are 2 rehirements for mm-hmm. you, in terms of your vision of life for that.
So I think it all comes down to calling, you know, what mm-hmm. our calling is. I believe everybody has a calling. For some people, their vocation is their calling. My wife was a nurse practitioner. Her father was a pastor. Mm-hmm. Most people in the helping professions, they have the ability to go to work every day and earn their living and simultaneously fulfill their calling. Mm-hmm. Other folks, and I put myself in this category, my vocation has supported my calling.
Right.
It wasn't the same thing. But when I figured out that intersection between the two, I was pretty sure for the 20 years I was at Axiom that my calling was not to sell data to marketers who were trying to better target their customers. That mm-hmm. was not my calling. But I did figure out that my calling was about working with people and helping them figure out better ways of living and working.
Right.
And I had folks kind of affirm that gift through teaching Sunday school and other endeavors. And so when I figured out that intersection between my calling and my vocation, it was a game changer for me.
Wow.
And Axiom didn't cease to be a good platform for that. It was a fantastic platform. But the conductor and the work that I'm doing now at UCA and otherwise emerged as what I thought was a more opportunistic way to fulfill that calling.
Wow, fantastic. That's good.
Hey, Jeff, we want to thank you so much for coming on the program today. For folks that want to get in touch with you, either about Cadron or about the conductor, mm-hmm. what's the best way for them to get a hold of you?
arconductor.org. Okay. arconductor.org, that's our website, and it's Jeff S. as in Jeff Standridge, at arconductor.org.
Excellent. Well, thanks again for being on the show. For our listeners, make sure you catch the post-show video wrap-up on our YouTube channel. And if you want to hear any past guests, you can visit our website at arkansas.shrimptankpodcast.com, and you can even subscribe to that through iTunes. So until next week, please stay safe, and remember, to become a shark in the business world, we all start out as shrimp.